When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Now let me take a moment for myself.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Because you guys love it when I live my best life like this, okay? Michigan in the Sweet 16 for a fifth.
The Rich Eisen Show.
Straight.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Sweet 16 in basketball, college football, playoffs.
Earlier on the show, Basketball Hall of Famer Chris Webber. Still to come, Houston men's basketball coach Kelvin Sampson, writer and director Judd Apatow, plus comedian and actor Adam Ray. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Ah, yes. It is hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show on the air. Great chat with Chris Webber in hour number one, talking about his Fab Five teammates making it to the Sweet 16 in the University of Michigan, and Juwan Howard. They're going to be taking on Villanova. And Juwan's predecessor lost to Villanova in the final just a handful of years ago. Judd Apatow is about to join us in studio. I can't wait to have him out here. Nice. So this much to great. Talk about with him. He's got a new movie coming out in theaters this Friday and on Netflix April 1st called The Bubble. And the cast is phenomenal. He's also got a new book coming out that we'll talk about. And I think we got a good celebrity true or false that touches on so many of other, his other touchstone pop culture moments. That's going to be coming up in this hour. But on our right now, Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line is the head coach of the University of Houston basketball team that just bounced Illinois from the tournament. And now Houston's next up opponent is Arizona, and kind enough to call in after that win over Illinois and ahead of this huge Sweet 16 matchup against the number one seed in the South is head coach Kelvin Sampson. How are you, coach?
I'm good, Rich. Thanks for having me on. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. You know, we're on Peacock, we're on Sirius XM radio, and we're on terrestrial radio, so I need you to paint the word picture for me. I really never start interviews out this way. So with all due respect, I ask the question, do you have your shirt on right now, coach? You have your shirt on? Yeah?
To the benefit of everybody on the bus, we're driving on to San Antonio right now.
Okay. So the answer is yes, you do have your shirt on right now. How many people did you hear from after we saw your shirts off celebration with your team, coach?
You know, to my phone until we're on the bus to get back. I think I had 300 and some texts. And at that point, you're just happy for emotion.
I bet. So, and your kids must have loved that. They must have absolutely ate that up, right?
You know, obviously something like that cannot be planned. A couple years ago, we beat Ohio State to go to the Sweet 16. That was the year we lost to Kentucky. But it was a very similar situation. Back then, though, I was wearing a shirt and tie. And as soon as I walked in, I just got blasted with the water shower, with the Gatorade cooler, and then the bottles and the squirt bottles and all that. And I said, well, when I turned the corner, I saw it was coming. I said, what the hell? You know, let's dive in there and just take it like a man. I took my shirt off for some dumb reason.
Well, it looks like you've been working out. I'll be honest with you. I'd like to know what your workout regimen is, coach.
Just trying to stay up with these 18 to 22-year-olds about it, walking around a little bit.
I bet. So let's get into the joy of it. And obviously, winning a tournament game is something you don't take for granted. But your team is went to the Final Four last year, and you lost two crucial members of that Final Four team due to injury in December. Your guards Marcus Sasser and Tremont Mark, you lost those guys. What was the feeling around your team in December when those guys went down, Coach?
Well, I think we played Texas State on the 22nd. That morning, Tremont Mark, who had the huge play last year against Rutgers on our way to the Sweet 16, he had surgery for a torn labrum, and we knew he would be out 6 to 8 months. But that night, the game we played against Texas State, Marcus Sasser, who was clearly our best player, is having a great year, broke his foot, and I didn't find out until the next morning. Hmm. We had 2 days, 2 day break for Christmas, the 23rd, 24th. We were coming back to practice the evening of the 25th. So when I got the news, my trainer called and said, "Coach, are you sitting down?" That's usually not what you want to hear. No. I said, what is it? He said, Marcus fractured the fifth metatarsal on his left foot. Then I said, well, what's the prognosis? He said, he's going to have surgery. And then still holding out hope, I said, well, is he done for the year? I just needed to hear it black and white. Mm. And I think from there, my mind just started racing. I know I just lost Tremont, now I've lost Marcus. That same game, Kyler Edwards had a grade 2 sprain of his left ankle. I knew we'd have him for a couple of weeks. So at that point, I was just counting bodies, racing to see how many we had, see if we could. I had 3 guards left in the program. But, you know, we just stayed in the moment. You know, we talk about just be where your feet are. Our next game was at Temple. We tried to figure out how to beat Temple, and then each game by itself, just every game became our season. We really couldn't plan ahead because we had to figure out how we're going to win the game. And I think that's important for our kids to have something to believe in. What's the plan, Coach? You know, what do you want us to do? And you know, as the head coach, you feel responsible for that. And we had Josh Carlton, the big kid that transferred from UConn. And we're fortunate to have Tajay Moore, the athletic kid that transferred from Cal State Bakersfield. We just gave everybody a new role and told them, just be all conference in your role. If you do that, we'll be fine.
And now here you are on the bus to San Antonio after winning 2 in your first go-round here in this tournament. So I imagine, you know, when you're taking on Arizona, there might be a nice home court advantage potentially in that arena, Coach?
Potentially. You know, we play in a beautiful, newly remodeled Fertitta Center. I think our first game was in 2018, but it's a beautiful, beautiful arena. And so we're going to try to make the AT&T Center where the Spurs play Fertitta South. but, you know, when the brackets came out, Rich, I, you know, you kind of peek ahead a little bit. Okay, whoever comes out of this bracket will move to the regional finals, and that'll be in San Antonio. I said, well, that will be nice. Then I quickly went right back to Alabama, Birmingham.
Right.
But now that we're here, you know, it's awesome. You know, it's, you know, in some ways, with this team, everything we're doing is gravy in a lot of ways. You know, who would have ever thought would have make the tournament after we lost those 2 guys? You know, this team's just been phenomenal. These are good players. Now, we're winning because we have good players. Now, we don't have a lot of them, but the ones we have, we fight fatigue, we fight foul trouble. But Kyler Edwards, Jamal Shedd, Tajay Moore, that's a really good backcourt. Fabian White Jr. has been phenomenal in his fifth year. He had ACL surgery and missed most of the year last year. Josh Carlton, we didn't know what to expect, but we thought he was a good player and that we could develop him. And he's been better than we imagined. Our bench is thin, young. We have two freshmen and a junior off the bench, but those kids play hard. I think that's what we do. You know, we have to make up for some things we don't have with our effort and our tenacity, and because we have great kids, they do it. So there's no magic here. We have good players, and they bought into our system, and I appreciate every one of them.
Calvin Sampson here on the Rich Eisen Show on the bus to San Antonio with the University of Houston Cougars getting set to take on Arizona. That must have been a late night for you. You must have been like the rest of America on the edge of a seat with a terrific basketball game between Arizona and TCU, right, to see who you're going to play next. Is that what you guys did that night?
Yeah.
Right?
We were in after the Illinois game, we flew back to Houston, and I actually got back in time to watch the game, and I was impressed with both teams. I didn't know who was going to win as the game was going back and forth, but the thing that stands out for me about Arizona is their size. You know, Coloco's 7 foot plus, Tabalas 6'11". Then they bring Balo off the bench 7 foot. You know, we have Josh Carlton, 6'10", then we our backup center's about 6'7", and we have two four-men about 6'7". So, you know, they're going to have a size advantage, and that will be a factor around the rim, rim protection and rebounding both ends. But you know, their star is Mathurin. I mean, he's elite, high lottery pick, scores at all three levels. Takes over a game. He's got that clutch gene, as Tommy Lloyd said. And all their guards. I mean, that team is really well put together. I can't tell you how impressive a job that Tommy's done. This time last year, as an assistant at Gonzaga, now he's got a team that that can win it. I mean, they can win it all.
And he's got Jason Terry's kid. Does that make you feel old too, Coach?
You know. My first win in the NCAA tournament mm-hmm. was against Arizona when they had Jason Terry and Richard Jefferson. I think that was 1999. So when I look out there and see Jason's kid, I guess in some ways we'll have come full circle.
Yeah, but that's when you take off your shirt and you're like, yeah, look at me now. That's you know what I mean? Like, that's when you go full circle there. You know what I mean? Yeah. Come on.
Full circle. My wife asked me, did I think I was at a frat party or something?
Well, what if you beat Arizona? What, you got a slip and slide? You're going to have that going on? Get that going on. Right?
If we beat Arizona, I don't know what I'll do. I'll have to figure something out.
Coach, thanks for the time. Have a safe rest of your bus trip. Really appreciate you calling into the show when you do, right in the middle of the tournament. I know you're on the bus, but that's when good moments can happen for you and your team and bonding. So I appreciate you taking some time to call. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Rich. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. Good luck against Arizona. That's Kelvin Sampson. How about that? His first NCAA tournament win was against Arizona and Jason Terry, and now he's taking on Terry's kid in a Sweet 16 game.
Life is wild.
By the way, how crazy would that have been if it was Houston versus TCU in San Antonio in a Sweet 16?
Right.
How nuts would that have been? Home games for everybody. That would have been insane. Well, instead, it's Arizona. Okay. Let's take a break here on our program because we've got an in-studio guest coming out here. Very excited to talk with Judd Apatow. He has got a new movie in theaters this Friday and on Netflix the following Friday called The Bubble. We'll talk about so much with Judd Apatow in a moment. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people, or as you might know from their jingle, O-O-O O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. Because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen. Hey, folks, it's time for the NFL draft, which means for me, I need a good night's sleep because if I don't have one, I'm just not myself. You know the deal. You know exactly how important it is to have quality sleep. It's a game changer for all of us. So Sleep Number helps me. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's setting is 70. We both get a great night's sleep because we could adjust the firmness of our mattress on each side. Improve your quality sleep because Sleep Number learns how you sleep thanks to their smart beds and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. That's the bubble again. Judd Apatow here on the Rich Eisen Show in theaters this Friday and on Netflix.
I don't think it's in theaters. I think it's just Netflix.
Oh,
except there are some
select theaters. I've been told there are select theaters.
There are select theaters, but I think on April 1st.
April 1st.
Not the week before. Okay. Like in Los Angeles, there's a theater in the Pacific Palisades.
Okay.
I think Paris and New York.
But those are select.
It's built to watch in your underwear at home.
Okay, good. I mean, if we're all, some people are still in their bubbles a little bit too.
Yeah, mentally, some people may never leave their bubbles.
Very good. And so the NBA, you know, the NBA bubble was a wild construct because it's in a theme park. Right?
Yes.
It's in where normally people are coming from all around the world and just hanging out and their passport to fun. And now all these NBA players are setting things up.
And the rooms are not as luxurious as most of those guys are used to.
Correct.
We didn't hear a lot about that, but there were certainly people saying the tub isn't big enough.
They're not used to seeing the Donald Duck themed wallpaper in their hotel rooms, right? Or taking a monorail to work.
And wasn't there one guy who started videotaping all of it and then they shut him down? Like, yo, don't talk about what's happening.
It's like Fight Club. We don't talk about the bubble. But the one aspect of the bubble that, you know, we've been talking about on the show that still lingers today is the NBA coaches use the bubble to get rid of wearing suits. They don't wear the coat.
That's over. The suits
over.
Are over.
And it's never coming back. We ask every NBA coach that comes on here, like, what? They were like, we weren't bringing our suits. There was no dry cleaning. No shot. Now they dress like they're going to the gym.
And now you don't know who the coach is.
You have zero. It could be just like
I walk to go get a soda. You think I'm the coach.
You should try calling a play at crypto, whatever the heck they call it now.
I don't like that they call it crypto. It's like Beanie Baby Arena. You know, it's like a Pet Rock Arena. You don't want to be part of a fad as the name of your arena.
The Cabbage Patch Arena didn't age well.
Yeah. It's like Enron. Remember Enron was the arena.
Right. Yeah. The Astros played in Enron for a good long while.
Exactly. Let's get a little more solid with your business before you start naming the arenas.
The funny thing is around here, Judd Apatow here on the Rich Eisen Show, was a number of LA sports fans that looked about the renaming of the arena as if it was like a lost era, an era
I missed Staples.
You have no idea.
Because you get used
to
anything. Whatever it is, like, you know, Shea Stadium. What was Shea?
Well, that was...
But what was the word Shea?
I think it was named after, like, some guy who, you know, probably was tight with Robert Moses back in the day, just splitting up the city, you know, or whatever.
And I still say Shea.
Right.
I can't help it, but I don't even know what it means, but it's just, it's in my heart.
So you're from Queens originally, or
I was
what?
Born in Flushing.
Flushing. Yeah. So in the shadow of Shea Stadium.
Exactly. And I made a 30 for 30 about
Doc and Daryl. And,
yeah.
So what did you learn from that 30 for 30? Did you learn anything new at all?
Anything new?
About Doc and Daryl at all, or what?
I think that we thought that we would talk about a common experience, two very young men who were thought to be the saviors. And that's a lot of pressure. And they were the saviors. They pulled it off, but then really had a terrible struggle afterwards with their sobriety.
Right.
And we wanted to get them together because I thought as a fan, I've never seen them talk about it. And that really was the intention for them to share the experience of what that was.
Okay. And you, so you met your heroes, clearly, right?
Well, I mean, I went to those games when I was a kid in 84, 85. That was my, you know, junior and senior year of high school. Then I went to college in 86. Yes. I was at USC. I didn't have time to follow baseball because it was my first year of college. So the only year I didn't follow was the year that they won.
Are you kidding me?
Exactly.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I mean, and I was so wounded from the previous 2 years because they would always just miss the playoffs by like a game and a half. And yeah. It was always close that I said, I don't know if I want to be in this much pain in my life following something this closely. I'm going to let it go next year.
Yes.
And then they won.
Okay. Yeah. 86 was my first year of college. Yeah. I'm a Yankee fan, so I didn't know Met, Red Sox. Yeah. I wanted them both to lose. Like somehow the earth would open up and swallow both teams whole.
Exactly.
You know, I just didn't know which to do. So you growing up in the New York City metropolitan area, you must have been around a bunch of guys that you grew up with who always claimed to have been part of something that they really had no business claiming, right? You've probably been around those people like that. That guy over there, Mike Del Tufo, is our sound engineer, an audio executive, as he likes to be called. He claims to, you claim to have started the K-Corner, right?
No. Hold that thought.
Okay, what is that?
I didn't start the K-Corner.
Yes.
I knew the guys that did it. Because I used to go to games in 85, 86.
Yeah.
It was my, when I left the Yankees for a few years.
Okay.
Because I was a Yankees fan early
on. But you were in the New York Times
and
quoted.
I was in the New York Times because a reporter was there on opening day, the day that Carter hit the home run to win the game.
Yes.
And it was the first game of the season. And I was there. The guys had left. We had met the guys the year before. So we became friends with them because we would sit
they
up
left.
There.
The K-Corner left. And
they left.
The whole
I
group left.
They had
left.
No one, like there was no one to hang
there
the
was
case.
No one to hang the case. John. And Gooden was still pitching. And I don't know why it was an emergency. So they're like, well, you guys want to do this? I'm like, yeah, we'll do it. We stayed. And the guys are like, who does the K-Corner? And people pointed down us.
And they got in the Times.
But are they your K's? Are you bringing K's?
Did you bring the K's? Did they leave the K's?
No. The K, we had everything was there.
It just stayed there day and night?
Stocked.
There's a K shed?
So
and a backwards K shed.
So physically, Judd, in that article, my friend, myself, my friend John were interviewed.
There you go.
So theoretically, we can say, but there's the actual guy that
you're the,
came out.
You're like the Sean Connery of K's. You're not the George Lazenby.
That's exactly.
I remember seeing the Mets.
Roger Moore.
You get it. You get it.
I remember that the first year of Dwight Gooden going to see them. I think they played the Cubs.
And yeah.
He got 18 strikeouts.
We went all the time.
It was one of the most exciting things I've ever seen. Every throw was like the last pitch of a game. And it really was bizarre that the place exploded on every throw. I've never seen anything.
Yeah, you'd clap and you'd send. I once went to a game. I think it was against the Brewers. Rob Deere, if that name rings a bell. I think he struck out 5 times. Like I don't think he laid a wood on the ball that night. And it really was a circus when Gooden started. Mm-hmm. Basically, I'm just telling you this story and introducing you to Mike Del Tufo to say your 30 for 30 wasn't completely comprehensive if it did not have
Mike. There was a lot of ground to cover. That's why they have that other amazing documentary. The
one that Kimmel did?
Yes.
It's the one for one.
That's an incredible documentary. There's a lot of story in the
oh my god,
you know, with the Mets.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Back that
in
was
the
amazing,
day.
Too.
We suffered a lot most of the time. And it's funny because I hosted the Directors Guild Awards the other night.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of suffering, Spike Lee is in the crowd.
Okay.
And I'm hosting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you the joke I did to Spike Lee, which I had to work up the nerve to say. I just said, Spike Lee has done so many incredible things in his career. He's a brilliant director, documentarian, commercial director, actor. And what's most incredible is he is also a Knicks fan, and he did all of that while depressed.
And did you look to see if he
was laughing. Okay, and then I said, it is very, very difficult to direct when James Dolan owns your team. And then the last joke was, I said, Spike, you being at all the games has not helped.
That's, by the way, true. All good jokes have a germ of truth in it, I think.
He's the greatest. It was a great night. He won the Lifetime Achievement Award at the Directors Guild Awards.
Yes.
And gave, like, very, very moving speech. But it was incredible to meet him because I'm a New Yorker, and it was the first time I met him.
I also saw your joke about Succession. That was really funny.
Yes.
Where you said that all the directing,
every nomination for best directing of a TV show was Succession.
Yes.
All five.
Yes.
And I said, so you're saying that the worst episode of Succession is better than every single thing on television? Like, even the Yellowstone episode where they shot up the diner is not as good as the fifth best episode of Succession?
Again, you're not wrong. That's what it is saying.
Exactly.
Funny. Judd Apatow here on The Rich Eisen Show. The Bubble is available on Netflix on Friday, April 1st. This book I'm holding up right here, Sicker in the Head, More Conversations About Life and Comedy, available on March 29th, wherever you get your books. What's this book about?
You can pre-order it if you like that kind of thing.
Why not?
I like to interview comedians. I started doing it when I was 15. I interviewed Steve Allen and Seinfeld and Howard Stern when I was in high school in the 80s.
How did you get in touch with them?
I would just lie to people and just say it was a real radio station, but it was a high school radio station,
okay,
and the signal didn't get out of the parking lot.
Oh, but, look at that photograph right
yeah,
there with
there's
Seinfeld.
There's me and Jerry. And look at it on the left there at his bookshelf.
Okay,
that's his apartment. That is a guy who is writing jokes. That's why he's the king.
Yeah.
He is built to create his comedy. He doesn't have time to fill that bookshelf.
So you went to his apartment and interviewed him there?
Yeah. And so then I put out a book of those interviews and some new ones with people like Jon Stewart and Chris Rock called Sick in the Head.
Mm-hmm.
And we give all the money away to charity to this place called 826, which provides free tutoring to kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the new book, I did a lot of it during the pandemic when I knew people were home. So I was able to get people like Letterman and Whoopi Goldberg and Lin-Manuel Miranda and Sacha Baron Cohen, because everyone was home.
Yes.
And so I started calling people like, I know you're home.
Yeah,
you can talk to me now.
You can't avoid your call.
Yeah.
Right. And that's in the book, Sicker in the Head.
Yeah, and we'll be doing some fun events. There's a night at the 92Y where I'll be there. And, we have some stuff in LA. So if you go to my website, judapatow.com, you can see me live talking to comedians about the book.
Fantastic. And again, that's available where all books are sold on March 29th, but you can pre-order right now. We have a segment, sir, called Celebrity True or False.
Okay.
Where there are stories from your past that we want to know if they are true or false to make sure that the internet is accurate. If that's okay.
That's all we want.
I appreciate that. Hit it. We actually have some.
We're so close to the internet being accurate that this is going to lock it up.
Exactly. This will lock it up, and we even have some production value to it. Go ahead and roll it.
Celebrity True or False.
You can't handle the truth.
That's it. That's our production value.
I like it.
What do you think? I mean, as a producer, director, what do you think?
That's
of our
like
production
the value? Kind of cut and paste graphics you just download from some site.
That's what we've got. That's what we've got. All the budgets. You're looking at the whole budget.
This is pretty nice.
Thank you.
You've scored.
We have
this
no
is a
actually.
Nice situation.
The crazy thing is, we find stuff here every day that we
every
had
day.
No
we
idea
no ideas,
was here, and half of it's broken. We have no idea how it got broken. Okay. First up, Judd Apatow, Celebrity True or False? True or False? You dropped out of college in your second year and wound up moving into an apartment with Adam Sandler. Is that a true story?
That is a true story.
How did you move in with Adam Sandler? How did that work?
Well, Adam at the time was living with Alan Covert.
Well, he's in all of his movies.
And Alan, from Grandma's Boy, and he produces Adam's movies, and he's hilarious. And they were living together, and at some point, I'm not sure Covert was covering the rent. I think is how I got in there. I think there was some sort of transition of Alan had a different situation, and Adam needed a new roommate. I paid $425 for my room. He paid $475 because his room had the bathroom in the room in our little terrible apartment in North Hollywood.
Okay.
And so that was like our early years as comedians trying to catch a break. Then he got Saturday Night Live and left me alone in the apartment.
With Alan Covert?
No, I was alone in the apartment. But I realized this the other day. When he left to SNL, he didn't bring his clothes or his ID. He just left.
He
just disappeared. Like, someone who disappeared forever. I literally have his driver's license from 1991.
He just said, screw it. I'm gone. I got the call.
Something else was happening.
All right. Second one. You interviewed Gary Shandling as part of what you just mentioned as a teenager for your radio station.
Yes.
And that's how you wound up getting hired to write jokes for Shandling when he hosted the 91 Grammy Awards. Is that
Well, that is false.
Okay.
I interviewed him when I was a kid on the phone. He was in Vegas, but he had just hosted The Tonight Show for the first time, mm-hmm. which was a big deal. And he was hilarious on the phone. Then I didn't, you know, I wouldn't follow up afterwards because I was a child. I was 16 years old.
Yes.
You know, you can't really follow up and go, hey, do you want to be my friend?
Okay.
But later in life, I was doing stand-up and he was doing stand-up and he was about to host the Grammys and he needed someone to help him write jokes. And that was my first really significant job in show business. And then I went to New York and Sinatra's on the show, Bob Dylan, Bono. It was crazy. You know, because I had never been around.
Sinatra was performing at the 91 Grammy
Awards. He got the Lifetime Achievement Award that year. And Bono gave it to him. And Nicholson gave an award to Bob Dylan.
It was a
very, very cool.
Oh, my God. Do you remember any of the jokes that you wrote for Shandling?
I always remember one joke, which is there was a country western guy with really long sideburns.
Yeah.
And Gary said, I've never seen sideburns like that before, and I'm a Trekkie.
Well, I know, you know, your documentary that was on HBO about his life through his diaries is one of the most amazing things I've ever seen.
Oh, thank you.
It was so beautiful. And
it's on HBO Max.
And everyone should see it, honestly, because it just reveals a human being that made so many people laugh, that had, you know, his own demons and his way that he always seemed to have a positive outlook.
Yeah.
Despite that, certainly what he wrote about. And I was fortunate enough to be introduced to him about a couple of years before his passing through a mutual friend. And through that, he invited me to lunch. Mm-hmm. And he sat down. And when we sat there, he'd already watched a couple of episodes of this show and gave me tips about moving the desk closer to the guest chair.
I'm still pretty far away.
I know that's the COVID thing. I think
it used to be closer.
It used to be much closer. Like literally he told me that you should be touching knees with your guest. Like, mm-hmm. And then the long emails he would send with just thoughts and notes. It was unbelievable. And we had just kind of met.
Yeah. He was very giving that way. Like a funny story is I always would have him at the table reads. Mm-hmm. So before we would shoot a movie, we would read it out loud. We get all the actors and we would invite a lot of friends and writers to tell us if the movie was working. So I had him at the table read for The 40-Year-Old Virgin. And then the debate afterwards with a bunch of people, Adam McKay was there. We were debating, does The 40-Year-Old Virgin masturbate? Right? Like, wouldn't that be a part of this? Like, can you ignore that concept of self-pleasure in a movie like this? And Gary takes a pause and he goes, what if you had a sequence where you just show him prepare to masturbate? And he puts on his favorite robe and brushes his hair. And it's in the movie and it's hysterical. And he would do things like that all the time.
And that's how that scene got in the film.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Do you have a good a go-to story that you can share about the Larry Sanders Show when you were on that?
About that show? I mean, everything was a story at the Larry Sanders Show because, you know, it's behind the scenes of a talk show. It's also on HBO if people want to see it.
It truly is in the conversation of the greatest television show of all time.
Period. Yeah, it's
end of story.
Very funny. And the Bubba, in a way, is like a grandchild to it because it's making fun of the behind the scenes of people in a bubble trying to make a flying dinosaur action movie.
With terrific cameos and a great cast and everything like that.
Yeah, so it's connected, but it was just always intense over there because Rip Torn was one of the stars.
Oh my God.
And Rip Torn was a genius, but very like gruff. And maybe he was drinking certain days. Like he was emotionally challenging, but it was always worth it because he was the best ever. Mm. And one day we're shooting and I'm directing. I've never directed before. And he just turns to the cinematographer. He's like, I see what you're doing. You're shooting my ear. You gave me these the Caesar shots to everyone else, but you're shooting my ear. And it didn't really make sense because the guy was like right in front of him and he didn't like the angle. And the guy's like, what are you talking about, Rip? He's like, I know the angles. I shoot skeet. And he really just goes off about this. And then later in the day, I see him walk over to the cinematographer, Peter Smokler, who did like Spinal Tap. It's an amazing cinematographer.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, this morning I woke up and I was washing my car like by my house and I was walking and I hit my head on a piece of wood hanging from my house. So I'm not mad at you. I'm just mad.
Because of that.
Because of that. But, and that's the kind of, that's how it would usually roll in a very strange way. But the scene would always be remarkable, and he was like a big puppy.
As Artie, I mean, it's unbelievable. One of my favorite lines, because I'm from Staten Island, by the way, great movie, The King of Staten Island. I grew up with every single person in that film. It seemed, it was as authentic as it gets. That just, I remember when Larry was complaining about the guest list, and it wasn't very up to snuff. And he says, on tonight, we've got Staten Island streetwise troubadours, the Wu-Tang Clan.
Well, what's funny is Gary didn't really know music that well. I hired my friend Juliana Roberts to, like, help book music acts. But Gary didn't really know almost anybody in music. Yeah. So we would book the people that we just wanted to meet.
Yeah.
So we're like, would the Wu-Tang Clan show up here? You know, so like, Los Lobos is on the show. Like, we would just, I remember we got Warren Zevon to do the show.
Yeah.
And, and we would just keep introducing people to Gary.
I love it. A couple more here with Judd Apatow, Celebrity True or False. LeBron was cast in Trainwreck because he was one of the only players and sports figures that Amy Schumer, who was writing it, had ever heard of. Is that true?
I think when you write a movie and you have a joke such as, you know, Bill Hader is someone who does operations on people's knees. He's a knee specialist. And his friend, we want his best friend to be a giant athlete, like the most successful athlete you could think of. So Amy, in writing, would just write, well, who's the most famous, successful person? So in your script, you always write that name. And then at the end of the day, you know, you get, I don't know, Glenn Gondrzik. Guys, guys, can I do an old reference?
By the way, that's a golf clap for Judd Apatow.
You didn't think I'd pull out something like that from the 70s?
Wow.
Anyway, yes. So you don't get the person that you intended to get.
Yes, correct.
And so Bill said, well, you know, he hosted Saturday Night Live, and he's a great guy, and he's really funny. Maybe he would do it. And then Bill and I went out to lunch with him after watching him in a game the night before. And the thing I always remember about the lunch, first of all, he got the joke instantly, and he was hysterical. Like, it's funny because he's really funny, and he understood the nuance of what that was. But he's eating at the restaurant, and all the different Lakers keep walking over. No, it was pre-Lakers.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it was before that. All his teammates keep walking over, and they're all exhausted from the night before. Like, they look annihilated at noon the next day. Like, they looked like they'd been through something terrible. All of them, and they're all like, hey, how you doing? I'm okay. How you doing? And I, they, like, people don't realize what it takes out of them.
Yes.
Am I right about this?
Well, it's also been, if it was the, if it was in Miami, it could have been a late night the night
it
before.
It did not have that sense. It's a, it looked just like true exhaustion. And I was like, in my job, I'm never that tired. I'm not recovering like that. So I was impressed at the work ethic.
So it could be that line from Airplane, Kareem. You tell your dad to drag Walton and Lanier up the court.
Exactly.
You know, drag Walton and Lanier's ass up and down the court.
I put LeBron right up there with Kareem and Airplane in terms of solid comedy.
But he got the idea, and he was great, and he was tremendous in that.
Yeah.
So was John Cena. He was hilarious in that movie.
John Cena was so funny, and also John Cena. And I can't say I was following wrestling at the time.
Yes.
So because, you know, I was more of a Bruno Sammartino guy.
Nice. That's the Glenn Gondrzik of wrestling.
Well, he was more successful than that.
That's true. Right? Yes.
But Cena came in, and I didn't. Someone just showed me a tape. Like, hey, maybe a wrestler could play this part, because we just wanted her to have a very muscular boyfriend. And I'm like, that guy's hilarious. And they were like, yeah, he's like the champion. I'm like, oh, I literally didn't know who he was, which is. It says bad things about me. I should be following wrestling more closely. And the nicest, funniest guy, just so game to go for it, came in with tons of ideas. And he's also, he does a funny cameo in The Bubble.
Okay, very good. The Bubble again in theaters on April 1st. And the last one, I know this is true, but it's just a way for you to please tell the story, that Steve Carell insisted on having his chest literally waxed. It literally is him.
Like, that's real hair, what you're looking at. Like, that's not like the prop version. Guys made funny hair.
That's
stickers.
Literally his hair.
That's the hair they ripped off, and we would just put it there. And that is the that like that still is the actual reaction to the pain of doing it. So we had five cameras set up.
Because this is a one take. Like, you can't.
We could only do it once. You can't like glue the hair back on and do it. And it was Steve's idea. He's like, I think it'd be funny.
Yeah.
Now, the thing I realized later
yes.
was he claimed at the time that he had never waxed before.
Mm-hmm.
But now I realize that he had.
Hmm.
Because he's a wax. He's Manscaped. He's Manscaped.
And, well, you've done, you know, Anchorman. We've done other films with him.
But he really pitched it like, I think this would be funny. I imagine it would be funny. It would hurt a lot. Like, no, he'd done it. It was all a lie. And the woman who waxes him
mm-hmm.
came in, and we needed an actress who also knew how to wax. Like a professional actress / waxer.
That's quite a Swiss Army knife.
And I
think
the woman maybe did it once or twice and got fired.
Acting?
The number one rule when you wax is you don't put the wax over the nipple because you could just rip someone's nipple off. And she did. There's like a shot. And we realized later that she lied that she knew how to wax just to get the part. So that might be why it hurt so much. Maybe it wouldn't have hurt if she knew how to do it.
As someone who has told some fibs in his past, you had to respect her for, you know, just wanting the role.
You got to fake the resume. Yeah. You got to. If there's anything I can say to the kids out there, fake the resume. Get the job. Then prove you can do it. Fake it till you make it.
Oh, my God.
Figure it out later.
And Kelly Clarkson was just an ad-lib? That was just...
Well, you know, Seth Rogen, you know, I knew that I wanted him to curse at her.
Okay.
Because as a kid, I always went to Action Park.
Oh, my God, you survived it.
And so Action Park, as everyone knows, has these, like, cement tracks, and you ride these scooters down them, and everyone wiped out on their arms, and with all their skin on their arm would get ripped off, and then you would go to the nurse, and the nurse would spray this, like, pink antiseptic, antibacterial something on it, you know. And but it was like a line of people. It could be like a nice woman would curse out. They all cursed out the nurse. And so I told... Steve, that story, and I said, just every time, act like you're not going to curse at her, and then curse.
Mm-hmm.
And then I asked Seth, can you write out a list of curses,
yeah.
which he wrote. And then I said, can you get a couple of clean curses?
Yes.
So if I ever have to air this on ABC, yeah. and then Seth wrote Kelly Clarkson.
Oh. Kelly. Oh. Have you ever run into her?
I just did it last week. We're bonded over this joke for life.
Oh my gosh, fantastic. And we didn't even touch on literally two-thirds of what you've got going on. Sicker in the Head, Judd Apatow, a book where you can pre-order right now. It comes out next week on the 29th. And then on the 1st of April, The Bubble. I didn't even mention Keegan-Michael Key is in this movie. Yes. And he is one of the funniest guys I have ever met.
Yeah.
He's been he's been incredible. What a heck of a cast.
Fred Armisen,
too. David Duchovny, is he one of your basketball friends from
I used to play basketball from
the defamed Gary Shandling games?
Yeah, but he played like more seriously at college, I believe.
Okay.
I don't know. Did he play? Is that a lie?
That'll be for his celebrity, true or false,
But he actually knew how to play.
Okay.
But I was mainly covering, you know, like weaker people like Alan Zweibel. Alan Zweibel from the great writer,
yeah.
Saturday Night Live legend,
yes.
And he fell on me once and dislocated my shoulder.
Oh, God.
And then that was the end of my basketball
career.
That's it.
Then that's the end of it. Great to see you, Judd Apatow. This was so much fun. Thank you for coming in. Again, Sicker in the Head, where all books are sold. And then The Bubble. Check it out on Netflix on April 1st. We are back with more in a moment here on The Rich Eisen Show. Let's talk Game Time. Boy, do we love using Game Time tickets at The Rich Eisen Show. And every single time I've been watching the basketball playoffs on TV, I've been wondering what it would be like to be at these games. And when you choose your tickets on Game Time, you can see the view from your seat, where the court is, where you are in relation to it. And then the all-in prices, that's my favorite feature. The all-in prices makes sure that you see the lowest price guarantee and also know exactly how much everything costs all in before you purchase. So all the guesswork is removed when you buy playoff tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use my code RICH for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Visit GameTime.co for restrictions. Again, create an account, redeem my code RICH for $20 off your first purchase. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, that was just fantastic. Just fantastic. Hilarious. When was the last time you really considered your dream? Our friends at Mercedes-Benz Vans want you to know that they can help you reconnect, because they think, and we all know, that you used to think about your dream all the time. It's time for you and your dream to get back together, because you can live the van life in a totally customized Mercedes-Benz Sprinter. Because this totally customized Mercedes-Benz van, this premium ride that we're talking about, means you can expect innovative safety features. I keep talking about crosswind assist and blind spot assist with you all the time. Just the other day, just trying to drive around town, there was a moment I could have used the blind spot assist, to be very honest with you. And the performance and reliability is amazing. You can expect that. The MBUX voice command system, a 5-star dealer network, and an available gas engine. It runs like a dream. So what do you say? Head to the Mercedes-Benz van dealership right now and get that Sprinter. Tell them your dream sent you. Hilarious. Good Lord, was that funny. My sides are hurting. You know what I love? My favorite line that he'd mentioned right there, Judd Apatow.
The curse?
Was, no, Rip Torn, the actor. And anybody who wants, if you just remember Dodgeball, it's like, what, you know, if you can throw a wrench, you can throw a ball, right? If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball, right? Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, Rip Torn is just known for being, you know, while he was alive, just insane. And so, for him to say that he knew that they were shooting the side of his head, even though the camera was right in front of him, and he says he knows all the angles because I shoot skeet.
What does that mean?
I shoot skeet, so I know the angles. And it's one of those things where it's just dangerous enough to not question him.
Right.
Right? Like, what are you talking about?
I can see you being a skeet shooter. Like, right? Yeah, of course.
Because you're like, if you question him, you might be the one to get the buckshot next. You know? Like, I kind of find that perfect. What a perfect story. Fantastic. You could tell about Rip Torn. Perfect.
He was on Shandling. That was, he was so, Larry Sanders, it was so, he was so funny, Rip Torn, on that show.
Oh, like, my God. Well, and then Jeffrey Tambor playing Hank Kingsley, like, hey now.
Hey now.
And then the writers behind the scenes, and then the cameos. That's what he's saying, that his new movie, The Bubble, is kind of like a grandchild to it, because it's a movie about a movie being made, and you're looking at behind the scenes, the cameos and the angst, and then the personalities, the clash, and then the issues that happen. It's just that The Bubble in Larry Sanders' world was Larry's own bubble, where he would just live in his own world, in which the most important thing was whether the show was received well or not.
That was,
and that show, again, as he mentions, that's on HBO Max. And then the documentary about Gary Shandling's life is just must-see. And one of the things, too, is that the emails that Gary Shandling had sent me talking about, like, he was doing some sort of intro for Bud Selig at an event, and he was, like, bouncing off a couple of jokes that he had written to see if they would work or not, or if it was too soon for a couple of them, you know? And then just talking about this show and what can be improved, and he sent them to my NFL email address, and then I think after the lockout, they kind of changed their method right around there as to how long emails could be retained. And I had saved them in a folder, and they just disappeared one day. And I'm wondering if I do I call, like, IT in New York and say, can you look for these emails with Gary Shandling on it?
They probably exist.
I don't know about that, brother.
You think they're, like...
I don't know. Gone. I think it's
like
gone.
Out to Pluto. Who's
the NFL IT guy?
He's gone. Sam's gone.
Yeah, Sam's gone.
Sam's gone.
Yeah.
Sam's gone. There when we were there.
Sam was the guy to see about
Sam
the firewall.
Sam was the guy to see about
I need an outside port. Can you help me?
Yeah. And his answer to you would be, who are you?
No, he acts.
All right. Okay, Adam Ray, the comedian, coming up. Chris Brockman's got a news update with some stories that are burning in the NFL. That's coming up in hour number three here on the Rich Eisen Show. Oof. We're still here on Peacock. Let's take this phone call. Al in Atlanta's been hanging on forever and a day. What's up, Al? How you doing?
Good morning, Rich.
Hopefully you enjoyed the conversations while you're on hold.
Oh, loved it. That loved the after-hour conversation. Loved all the great stories.
That's
but I got a bone to pick with Atlanta, and I got a question for Brockman.
What's up?
The bone to pick with Atlanta is last week, Atlanta lets the best, the Braves, let the best first baseman in franchise history go. And where does he go? He goes to the Dodgers. The only three teams worse would have been the Mets, the Yankees, or the Red Sox. It's just painful. I was hurt. I felt betrayed by my team. And then I was like, I started to get over it. I started to feel a little bit better. Started to be fine. And then this week rolls around, and what do the Falcons do? They trade the best quarterback in franchise history to the Indianapolis Colts. Now, nothing against the Colts, but all we get in return is a third-round draft pick? And not even the best third-round draft pick the Colts had to offer? Like, what are Atlanta teams trying to do to me?
Well, I think what had to – look, Ryan had to, at some point, the only way, I guess, with his cap hit, they actually took $7 million less. Yeah. It was $7 million less to get rid of him. And – at some point, they were going to put it on the credit card. I think doing it right now, and at some point, I just don't know how sustainable it would have been to keep with Matt Ryan.
I actually think they did Matt a solid.
They did?
Yeah.
After all those
years.
They
got him to a better situation with a much better chance of winning for the next year, two, three, maybe.
right.
And then they're just eating the $40 million in
cash. They have
space.
To. Yeah. Like right now, you do it now. And then it's done and over with, and now you can start from scratch. You do have a top 10 draft choice, and I do like your coach. I do like him.
I like him, too. I like the choices he's made. I kind of feel bad for the nickname I gave him before I even saw him, you know, coach it down. But he's lived up to a better nickname. I'll figure one.
Okay, you do that, Al. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. You know, you nailed it, Chris. I mean, they did him a solid.
They did him a solid.
Because at this point in time, you know, Calvin Ridley's not playing.
Right.
Clearly, they have to at some point get Ryan's number off their books.
Mm-hmm. And if you just look at the roster,
had they kept him, you know what they probably would have had to do was probably do what Minnesota did, was extend him and make the cap number more palatable now.
Right.
And
it's
then
it's
you
better
put,
now
then
for
you push
everyone,
it into the
for
future.
Everyone involved.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.